Thanks a million, Shane.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Hello, hello. Good afternoon. It's Monday. How are you doing? Hope you had a lovely weekend. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. What did you get up to? Let me know. I know loads of you were down at Elton John in Cork. How was it? It looked amazing. I was following along online. What a legend that Rocket Man is. He's just phenomenal and still has it, doesn't he? And in fact, I saw on Twitter an avid fan who was actually dressed up as a Rocket Man. Full on spacesuit, right up the front, giving it socks, and other people around him were sitting down enjoying the show. But the Rocket Man was on his feet or on her feet, rocking it out. And it looked like a sort of a fleecy costume, like a white fleecy costume. It had grey rocket tanks on the back. So I would say they were in a total sweat by the end of the gig. But did you see them? Or maybe you were the Rocket Man or the Rocket Woman. Let us know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. But I have to say, I love when I'm at a gig or watching a gig and I see people just really lost in music, which is exactly what was happening there. What else? Yes, I was in Liffey Valley yesterday evening about 5 o'clock, grabbing a few bits as you do. And I was parking up the car and a big group of young fellas passed me by, and not uncommon in Liffey Valley or any other shopping centre at the weekend, but these guys looked so slick. Like they were suited and booted to the max. Three-piece suits, sunglasses, shiny shoes. There was about 12 of them and they were in flying form. So I thought they were on their way to some party, but they were heading to the cinema, in fact, to watch the new Minions movie of all things. Of course, I was oblivious to the new global TikTok trend, which sees groups of lads known as Gentle Minions turning up in formal suits, clapping and, you know, just having the crack at this movie. But there are videos that are doing the rounds that show teens getting kicked out after becoming too rowdy and throwing bananas, which are apparently the Minions' favourite fruit. So one small cinema in the UK tweeted over the weekend, "We are currently not admitting unaccompanied children wearing suits for Minions, The Rise of Gru." But you see, it's kind of thrown a spanner in the works because Universal Pictures, who are the production company behind the franchise, is taking a much lighter approach. And they posted a message of support on Twitter to everyone showing up to Minions in suits. We see you and we love you. And of course, they'd have to. The official Minions TikTok account has also embraced the practice, reposting one of the viral videos with the caption, "Bob Speed, you gentle Minions." So let me know if you brought the kids this weekend. I think it only opened this weekend. And did you see this in action? Clara here in the office, she brought her gang to the cinema in Kilkenny and they loved the lads that turned up. They thought they were gassed. They didn't cause any trouble. And it was just a bit of extra entertainment. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Do you remember when you used to go to the cinema and everyone would clap at the end and you'd stand up and you'd go for the infant? Like, nobody does that anymore. Just on the Ryanair flights. What else? Eliza Jane. Yes, Eliza Jane on Twitter. We love you. She put up a message that made us all smile today and sent us into a rabbit hole of looking up misheard lyrics of songs, because she said, "My 8-year-old is singing quietly to himself in the back of the car. Dancing queen, young and sweet, only 17th. So cute. Have a listen to the original. You are the plausible mistake. In fairness, 17th. And as I said, we all have our own favourites. We'd love to hear yours, the lyrics that you've misheard. We love this one. Carrick Mines and the Lady Gaga song. It actually can't read minds, poker face, but we like to think it's a little nod to good old Carrick Mines. This one is also gas, made famous by comedian Peter Kay. Have a listen to the man in action.
You know that song, "We Are Family"? For years I thought they were singing, "Just let me staple the vicar." Right? Who's right and who's wrong here? Listen.
All of the people around us, they say,
I just love that. "Just let me state for the record" is the actual line. And of course, that's "We Are Family" from Sister Sledge. So any more, get them into us. Let me know your favourites. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. I think if you've got kids, you hear these quite regularly. Now, did you light the barbecue this weekend? In some parts of the country we did, and in some parts we didn't. Where is this heat wave we're supposed to be having? It didn't appear where we were at the weekend anyway. But this time of year, we'd be lost without ketchup and mustard, because that's just a staple part of any Irish barbecue, right? Not so anymore, it seems, because apparently the sale of ketchup, brown sauce and mustard are down in popularity, as research shows that we are now tending to go for spicier, trendier alternatives. So clearly we need a little more zing in our lives. Ketchup, brown sauce and mustard is being replaced by peri peri, buffalo sauce or something with a little more kick to it. Now, don't get me wrong, I am fond of the bit of peri peri or the Frank's hot sauce or whatever, but you just need the ketchup with the burger, and I couldn't go through my week without the English mustard. I put it on everything. My favourite sandwich, brown bread, big hunk of cheddar cheese, fresh slices of crisp Granny Smith apple and lashings of English mustard. It is delicious. So we want to know your go-to condiment at home and what do you love to put it with? 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, a story that caught our eye today was about bats in a bank in Blarney. Now, say that 10 times and see how you get on. But what do you do if you find nearly 100 bats in your roof? Well, you call my first guest, Susan Kerwin from Bat Rehabilitation Ireland, who answered the phone when bat pups started turning up on the floor of the AIB in Blarney. Susan, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm great. So tell us what happened.
Well, I got a call on Tuesday about two bat pups that were found on the floor of a branch of the AIB in Blarney, which is not too uncommon. At this time of the year, bat pups are being born, so they will show up in small numbers.
Okay.
So that was fine. I went down and collected them from the branch, and then the following day...
And they were obviously alive. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
They were alive. They must have fallen from a big height.
They would have come from the ceiling. So they came into the building.
Yeah.
And what happened was there was a crack in the ceiling that was below the roof.
Okay.
And they came down through there.
Okay, okay.
So they were fine. The bank staff are brilliant. They scooped them up, put them into a little box and made sure they were okay. And that was fine. The next day I got another phone call, but this time there was 40 bats that they found on the floor.
Oh,
so 40
goodness.
Bats are pups again, which is a huge amount. So I went down, we collected the bat pups, brought them home, started feeding them because they have to be fed every 3 hours milk because they're still only 4 weeks old. And then the bank staff had contacted a group of ecologists that were going to come out and assess the roof to see where the bats were actually getting into the building.
Mm.
Unfortunately, on the Thursday morning, I got another phone call to say that there was a further 50 plus bat pups that were found.
Oh my goodness.
It turned into a huge, big project then.
So you turned up on Thursday and collected another 50 little bat pups?
50 bat pups.
And sorry, Susan, when you say you brought them home, like where do you now put 92 bat pups?
Yeah. So I have a cabin in my garden, and that's what I use as my bat clinic. And that's where bats that come in that are sick or injured, they come in, we treat them, and then we leave them there till they've recovered, and then we bring them back to where they have to be released.
Okay.
The most bats we've had in at one period would have been about 70 bats, but they would have been adults.
Okay.
So they would be self-feeding. I've never had to experience something like I did last week.
Oh my goodness.
It was like a conveyor belt of baby bats that basically needed to be fed milk.
How did you catch them when you went into the bank? Did you need special equipment, or because they couldn't fly, was it just easy to scoop them up?
It was very easy to scoop them up, and the staff were brilliant. I mean, I have to give them so much credit. Once they'd given me the call, they had gathered the bat pups up. They had put them into a secure box with a blanket for them inside it. Just, you know, they were really concerned about them. And it was just a matter then of me coming down with an incubator, picking them up and transporting them back. So while I was in Limerick with 90 plus bats trying to keep them alive, there was a team of ecologists and the staff of the Blarney branch racing to try and find where the bat pups had actually entered the building.
Yes.
So you can imagine Friday morning, I got another phone call from the bank. My heart sunk because I said, oh my God, it was just impossible. There's no way I would have been able to keep going with that many bat pups.
Yeah.
But this time the call was, we found a roost. You can bring the pups back and we'll try and get them back in. I was never so happy to get down the road again to Blarney.
So, Susan, when you're looking after 92 bats who are only, you know, what age were they? Were a couple of weeks old?
4 weeks.
4 weeks. So are you feeding them constantly then?
Constantly. So they all have to be fed milk. So it's a special milk powder that we use for them. They're obviously, like all animals, you know, we don't feed them dairy, cow's milk. So you're feeding them with a tiny little pipette and it's maybe 0.3 of a mil each bat pup will take for each feed of this milk. So we have, the bats are all inside the incubators. You're passing them from one feeding it into the next incubator. And then that was just, every time I turned around and moved a blanket, there was more in the incubator and more. It was just...
And did you manage to keep them all alive?
Yeah.
Every single one of them?
Yep, they're all alive. So
you
they were all
are
alive.
Incredible. Were you doing that on your own?
I was. But
so did you sleep at all? Or did you like?
No, I didn't. But my partner, Tommy, who's amazing, was on hand to keep telling me, you're doing a great job, you know, and making the coffee and everything else. So it's, as I said, there's only, this doesn't really happen. This is the first time that this happened. And it's not a very common situation.
Okay.
To happen. So I've had loads of messages and calls from concerned members of the public saying that, you know, we have bats in the roof. Is this something that will happen to us? It's really not.
Okay.
It's not. So, you know, thankfully, it's very uncommon.
It's very uncommon. So Bat Rehabilitation Ireland, is that just Susan Kerwin?
That's Susan Kerwin.
That's nobody else except you?
No, but in Dublin, we have Amy Walsh, who has the Dublin branch of Bat Rehabilitation Ireland. So okay. She's in Dublin, but Limerick, it's just me.
Okay. And where did your interest or fascination with bats come from? Because clearly you adore these creatures. You have a cabin in your back garden specifically for them. So how, like, why bats and not cats?
Oh, I love all animals and I've always loved all animals. But when I was 27... I was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And I, at that time, my children were quite young. I had an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old, two boys. And as you can imagine, it was the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to me in my life. And sleeping was just a huge issue because I was a single parent. So once the kids were gone to bed, you're just left there at night with your thoughts and, you know, it can be very stressful. Oh, so what I would do is I'd go outside the back of my house and I'd have a cup of tea. And there was a very large a colony of bats that were living in one of the corner houses. So they'd come out at night and I'd be watching them going between their roost site and the tree line. And, you know, I looked forward to this every night and I started to study them. So I bought a bat detector. I would go out and I'd listen, using the bat detector, listen to what species of bat they were and just watch where they were foraging. Now, this gave me something to take my mind off what was happening at night and something to focus on. Mm. So bats will always play a really important part for me. And they helped me through such a difficult time in my life that it just seemed like the next step was to get more involved in the rehabilitation and to build awareness of the importance of bats to a healthy environment. So it was
That's
just a natural
incredible.
Progression.
It's amazing. It's amazing that connection, and it's what you needed at that time in your life.
Yeah.
And how are you now, Susan?
Well, I'm good. After my hysterectomy and all the treatment, you're left with a certain amount of problems that all women, you know, most majority of us would suffer with.
Mm.
But no, I'm happy and my kids are great and everything. And I'm actually engaged now. So Tommy's listening there. So yeah, so we'll be getting married next year. So.
And how do you bring that up on your first date when you go and you're having a drink or a coffee with Tommy and you say, I am the bat lady?
Yeah, I actually would always be a bit concerned about those things, but he loves nature and he loves animals and he was just like, this was amazing to him. So I looked out.
You looked out. And has that love passed, like, does he feel the same now? Do your kids feel the same? Or is this just your baby? This is your thing?
No, my kids feel the same. They're very involved in nature. They love animals. Tommy is the same. you know, we take in other animals as well. Mm. I am a falconer, so I worked as a falconer for many years training birds of prey. So I get injured owls and from the Barnard Project, and I take in other types of birds of prey as well. So. Mm.
It's great that the kids love them as well, because there's a fear around them, like, which is so unjustified. And I mean, we have so many bats in this country. And again, they're such docile little creatures.
Yeah.
I'd love to know, because we've got people texting in here, how can people donate or help? Or I suppose find out more.
That's amazing. Well, like, if people want to help us, they can contact us, because everything that I do is voluntary. So we don't get funding for this.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to help, they can message on our social media, on my social media, which I would be delighted about. And if people just want to help bats in general in their garden, a great way is to, you can use a water feature. So you don't have to have like a pond in your garden. You can use something like a large pot that you can make like a little aquatic area in your garden. Just by leaving wild areas is another way of helping bats, but it also helps other animals. But by having this water features in your garden, you're really attracting the insects, and that's what will draw the bats in.
Okay.
So if you focus on getting insects into your garden, you'll get the bats in.
Okay, well listen, you are incredible. 92 little baby bats were sent back to their roost, and hopefully are all the better for it. Susan Kerwin, so lovely to chat to you this afternoon, and have a great day.
Thank you, Catherine. Okay, mind yourself. Bye.
Bye. That is They Might Be Giants, Birdhouse in Your Soul. Oh my God, I brought my youngest son to Elton John and the Rocket Man up the front made us laugh so much. Somebody else who was at Elton. I took my 16-year-old Zoe to her first concert in Cork on Friday. We were sitting up the front, and in the middle of the concert, we decided to walk up the front. John Magan from the band threw his drumstick out to the crowd and my daughter caught it. It made her night even better. She's planning on getting a frame for the drumstick. There you go. Then we were talking about misheard lyrics. Some funny ones coming in here. Catherine, the song Mercy by Duffy. I'm begging you for mercy. I'm begging you for mercy. She says that, but can be mistaken for I'm begging you for birdseed. Okay, we'll go and take a listen to that one. I'm a Nanstone Cowboy. Oh, like that one instead of Rhinestone Cowboy. That's a good one. Tommy used to work on the dart. Instead of Tommy used to work on the docks, Bon Jovi. And this is my particular favourite. My daughter was singing the Cranberries, Do You Have to Let It Linger? Do you have to bite my finger? Yeah, keep them coming in. Love them, love them. All right, it is time now for me to tell you about today's quiz. Yes, we are reeling in the ears, and we have gathered up sounds and clips from over the years and decades, including songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we are looking for two people to come on and answer three questions each. But there is a little twist, which of course you know by now. We can play you a short clip, which gets you 2 points, or a long clip, which will be a little bit easier, gets you 1 point. And let me tell you what you are playing for today to make sure that you're brave enough to pick up the phone. Carton House, Ireland's first Fairmont property and now a 5-star resort, is located just 25 minutes from Dublin in the County Kildare countryside. It is absolutely fabulous. Set on 1,100 acres of private parkland, it's home to 2 championship golf courses, a luxury spa, wellness facilities, loads of other outdoor activities to do, boat trips, golfing, fishing, dining experiences. You can have afternoon tea in the Gold Salon, wine tasting in the Duke's Restaurant, and fine dining in the Morrison Room. So if you are our lucky winner today, you get 2 nights for 2 people in Carton House, with a delicious dinner on 1 evening in Kathleen's kitchen. So what do you have to do? You've got to answer this question. Today, the 4th of July, is celebrated as the National Day of Independence in what country? Call us now, 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. Give it a go.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, many people on dialysis are just trying to get through the day, unless, of course, you are Mr. Paddy Cox. Paddy, while he was awaiting his second kidney transplant, decided to set up his own clothing company to help others that were going through dialysis and other forms of treatment, including chemo, where, I suppose, during hospital visits, it can require drips, cannulas or needles being attached or inserted. And that can be awkward, I suppose, in regular clothing. Paddy, good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And you are wearing Dialyze.
Oh yeah, I'm representing, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the brand and tell me a little bit about the gear.
Yeah, so Dialyze, we kind of set up probably just, I was on Dialyze probably 2 years at a time.
Okay.
And I said, to start at the beginning, I was kind of on Dialyze when I was a kid as well. And I always remember it was just, every day it was just so difficult to find something to wear. Because obviously when you go on treatment, the minute your blood gets flowing on the machines or whatever, you just get cold, you know. And it just needed something. I thought something would be there to make our lives a lot more easier on treatment. If it's dialysis or chemotherapy or Crohn's, anything at all.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. So I was kind of looking away. My cousin had manufacturers in Cascoma as well, doing in a sport.
You're a Kilkenny man.
I'm a Kilkenny man. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I kind of went to him with the idea of what I wanted to do and kind of took from there.
And I love it because you're wearing it now. So I see zips on, try and describe what you're wearing both sides. So there's zips in, on, say, your chest, both sides of your chest.
That's right. So chest or underarm full-length zips as well.
Full-length zip under the arm, okay.
Two for the chest as well. And our new range actually have for abdomen, for like perineal dialysis or any abdomen.
And they look cosy.
They're very cosy, yeah. Yeah, like we line them with fleece as well, just for a bit more comfort and support, you know.
Okay.
Because you do get very cold on the machine.
I suppose, because you're in there for what, 3 or 4 hours at a time?
Yeah,
sometimes.
I was doing 4 hours on the machine, you know, so it's quite a long time.
Let's go back. So tell us a bit about yourself. You're a Kilkenny man,
Castlecomer,
35. So young chap. And you were born, excuse me if I'm saying this right, you were born with gastroschisis?
Yeah, gastroschisis. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is that?
So it's a very rare condition. It's basically you're born with your insides outside. And then, unfortunately, like, nowadays, they'd be able to fix it very quickly. But I suppose in the 80s, when I was born, there wasn't much protocol there for that. So I did get a lot of problems after surgery.
Okay.
I got adhesions on my kidneys, which I kind of went into slowly kidney failure through my years.
Okay.
Then eventually lost one kidney.
Did that affect your childhood all the way
massively.
Through?
Okay. Yeah, massively. Like, I couldn't go swimming. I couldn't do sports, especially being from Kilkenny.
Yeah.
We all want to be a hurler.
Of course. So sport was completely out of the question.
Yeah, it was. It was completely, yeah. Like, even you have your school kids going swimming every Friday and you're kind of sitting there watching them. And, you know, people are just kind of whispering, why is he not going? Why is he not allowed in? And automatically you feel very different to everybody else. So I think my way of actually coping with that was I was just a joker or a messer, and, you know, but I'd go home and it would have really affected me.
Okay.
You know, I would have been,
of course,
I just felt an outsider.
Yeah.
You know, people treated me differently or I wasn't one of the lads or that kind of thing. So,
when did you have your first kidney transplant then?
My first kidney transplant was, I was about 17, 18.
Okay.
I'd done, prior to that, about 4 years on dialysis as well.
Okay.
Then, like that, the phone call just came out of the blue.
So when you're 16 years of age and you're doing years on dialysis, so like from 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. So are you going in 3 times a week for 4 hours at a time?
Yeah. Well, back then, because I was a bit younger, I was only doing, well, I won't say only, I was doing 3 hours.
Okay.
But it was still 3 days a week, so it was... They collect you late after, like, school, all that crack. Then you drive down to Waterford, get your treatment, come back. And it was, it's funny, when you do get used to things like that as well, even though how difficult it is, but...
It just becomes a part of
your week. It
becomes
a part
week.
Of your day. Yeah, that's it. You know, you just get up and do it.
And so, for me, more not for anybody else, but to explain what dialysis actually does.
Yeah, so... For myself, I was zero function. So everything I ate and drank, from your toxins, your fluid, I would keep everything on my body. Well, that's what dialysis patients, we go through every single day.
Okay.
So we can't get rid of toxins. Every fluid or food, everything we drink will stay on us until our next treatment, which is quite a lot. You think if you drank a pint of water, that goes nowhere, only stays in your body. And then the fear of that, which I always had, was, which happened once or twice, I got hypertension. Which is that pint of water went to me, I fill up my lungs, and then you find it very hard to breathe, and then it's very scary. It is very scary. You're in, you know, you're very close to having a stroke by having too much fluid in the day. And the weekends, I used to finish my dialysis on a Friday, and then my next one is Monday. So we had a kind of a long break, which was Saturday and Sunday. But by Sunday, you have so much fluid built up that you just feel like a wet teabag, you know what I mean? And
you're just waiting for Monday to go in.
You're dying for it.
You know,
you just... watching the clock all Sunday, waiting for that the next day to come.
And are you terrified then in terms of drinking? Like, does it depend how much water how much water you can drink? Does it depend on your weight and your height and all of that?
Yeah, obviously? It would. Roughly, we're allowed between like 700 mils and a litre a day. It depends. Like, I'd be quite active anyway, so I could burn off a bit of fluid off me. Mm-hmm. But I suppose for older people, they have a very, very strict fluid intake. Mm-hmm. They would prefer, even if you're thirsty, just get a cube of ice and suck on that for a while and just get rid of the thirst.
So when you're on the dialysis machine, it's essentially taking your blood out, the non-filtered blood out, washes it, for want of a better expression, and puts it back in clean.
Goes in through a big filter. You have two needles, arterial and venous.
Is it painful?
Very painful. Yeah. It is painful. Like, the needles are quite long. They're about 2.5-3 inches long. Okay. And you have two of them in your arm. So I have a fistula here in my forearm. And the two needles go in. Yep. One takes out all the blood, cleans it, filters it, and puts it back in. But I was getting my whole blood was taken out probably 87 times in 4 hours. So it is amazing what your body goes through in them 4 hours. You know what I mean?
Because
you suffer with turbid anxiety, depression, fatigue. I was getting really bad RLS, with rested leg syndrome.
Okay.
So I wasn't sleeping. I was probably sleeping every second day at max. And then you're getting angry because you can't sleep right. And you have to watch everything you eat. You have to watch.
To watch.
You know, it's a real diet.
When you then realised, so the kidney transplant happened, your first one, when you were 17, how long did you get out of it before you started feeling that it was not working the way that it should?
I got roughly about 12 years out of it.
Okay.
But saying that, I went into rejection very early on from my transplant. So I won't say I got a good 12 years out of it. I got had about 4 or 5 biopsies, constant infections every few weeks. And I knew at the time my kidney was nearly gone, but I wasn't mentally ready for dialysis again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important with people going on the treatment is you have to get yourself right before you even start it.
Mm.
For weeks and months beforehand, I was like coughing blood and all this kind of stuff. And I knew mentally I wasn't ready to start in this because I knew it was going to be a long process.
Mm-hmm.
So what actually happened one night, I got very, very bad one night and I went in through A&E. And like that was no choice. I said, look, you have to start right away.
Okay.
Which I knew I probably should have started a good few weeks and months before
trying to
that.
Bring yourself to that place.
Yeah, I wasn't in the right headspace. You know, it takes up your life.
What was it like then getting the phone call to say that a kidney had been found, so a second kidney had been found?
Yeah, it was weird. I have a barbershop in Castlecomer as well, Smoke and Mirrors, and it was a busy week we had, so I stayed back doing a few late appointments, and it was rushed about 10:30. I finished up and just got home. I was wrecked, tired, because I only had dialysis as well, and I got home, only got into the bed, and then the phone rang. I was like, Bowman Hospital. And inside I was like screaming. I was like, oh yeah, that's fine, yeah, I'll be up there in an hour, that's no problem, yeah. You know, and then I just got off the phone and it was just complete shock. It was complete shock because I was like, but then like, so they tell you on the phone, look, don't get your hopes up too high, just in case you're not a match on when you go up and your bloods are off or something. So I was
and
trying not to get
too
excited.
And had you exhausted the avenue, obviously, of family matches or sibling matches?
Yeah, like it's all my family and a lot of my friends actually went to get a match for me as well. And it was actually surprising me. A lot of people actually only cut their hair. I had one guy in particular that went
to analyse a match.
Yeah. Oh, he went. It was actually a guy. He was a Polish guy, one of my neighbours. Now, I only know him really from cutting his hair. And like that, he actually got his family, went to Bowman, got all the tests done. And as it turned out, he was the match at the end. But it was things like that that really hit me. Like this guy, I may never see him again.
You.
And he's going to give up an organ for me. And he's like 4 or 5 kids. It's been kind of a crazy journey, but all my family did go and get tested. I had one sister in particular, Blaheen, and she was 100% match. Because of my second transplant, I have to have 100% match because my antibodies would just attack.
Okay.
And so she went, got all the tests done and over the moon. And as it turned out, she only has one kidney herself. And it was like a 1 in a million phenomenon that this actually happens. And of course that happened to me, but
she didn't know she only had one kidney, obviously.
Oh, she didn't know. No, she was living a perfect normal life, which you can live a perfect life on like a half kidney, not even. So it was kind of amazing how the whole thing progressed. But now she, even at the state where she is now, she's very conscious about her kidney. Everything does happen for a reason.
For a reason.
To be honest. Yeah.
Do you feel that, did you ever lose hope at that point before that phone call from Bowman Hospital?
100%. 100%. And it's funny, I've talked to a lot of transplantees as well about it. It's The final 2 weeks, like I'm always very positive when it comes to my illness and all that kind of crack. But the last 2 weeks, I knew I was near the end of my rope. I knew I wasn't going to last much longer on the machine. And it just, yeah, it was probably like, it was only nearly 5 years. Mm. And for them last 2 weeks to be the hardest I've ever done in my life. Mm. And like I get home, and normally I just keep going anyway. But I get home, I was vomiting all night. I was just sleeping the whole time. Just could not get myself together. And I just felt my body was just hitting wall and starting to shut down and deteriorate. Mm. And just, it was just a miracle that happened to me. Mm. I won't lie to you. Like, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't get it. I know that, mm. you know.
And, you know, and it's interesting because I actually researched quite a bit about dialysis this morning because I didn't know about a whole lot about it.
Yeah,
that's it. And, like, I know, you know, chemotherapy you hear a lot about, you hear more about.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's, you know, it's something that, through various friends and family,
exactly.
Yeah, years that I know about it, but I didn't know about dialysis, what you have to go through, the hours that have to be spent in hospital.
It's a full time. It's like a prison. You know, it really is a prison because it's every 3 days, but it's not even the time you do on the treatment. It's the day after. It's the night after. It's the morning you wake up. Mm. Every day, you don't know how you're going to feel from day to day. And there's always that, I said, I went to bed one night with drank off like half a glass of water, not even a pint. Mm. And I didn't sleep the whole night with the fear of getting a heart attack or a stroke because I wasn't sure where that fluid was going to go.
Mm.
And so that fear is always there.
Always
but
there.
We suffer so much and it's never really talked about. As I said, we are always overshadowed with like chemotherapy and other illnesses like that. But yeah, I kind of love what I'm doing now because I'm able to speak up for so many people on dialysis, you know, and we never really had a voice as such.
Mm.
I say I'd be probably the last person I thought would ever have a voice for something like this, but I love how I'm helping people now. And it's just let them know that, you know, we're not alone and everyone does think about them.
And how's the recovery going? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. It's been a hard recovery.
And does being busy, is that something that helps you clearly? I'd say your family might maybe disagree.
Yeah.
Because running a barbershop, then setting up the clothing brand.
That's it.
It's full on.
I've always been a goer. Like, I suppose my family, we're always workers. And, you know, I'm not one for sitting down, really.
Dialyze is the name of the clothing brand. And is it available online?
It's online, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's your dream with the brand? Like, what would you like to achieve with it?
See, at the moment, like, if I dream big, I'd love for Dialyze to be handed out to patients that not just want them, but need them. And, you know, starting a business like this, they are quite expensive because to run a business in Ireland is expensive anyway. But I would love, like, if the HC or some of that just was able to just give them to patients. Mm. That would be my dream. But it's just to grow my following and grow my story. And as I said, I do see myself as a bit of a voice for other patients.
Mm. But I have to say, just even looking at you now, and what popped into my head was, when you're sitting in hospital, are there men and women there?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so I can understand why, from a female perspective,
exactly,
from a male perspective, 100%. Why you'd like a little bit of privacy,
a bit of dignity.
A bit of dignity,
yeah.
Of course.
Like, a majority of patients
and
are going in.
It's amazing, but like a sleeve zip.
That's all it is.
Changes everything.
Exactly, 100%. But like, a lot of these patients you meet, and they're the most stand-up people you'd ever know.
Mm.
You know, like, the old lads coming into my dialysis unit wearing suits and ties and going on treatment, you know. So they are unbelievable, unbelievable people.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
It's so lovely to talk to you and to meet somebody who's so passionate about what they do and has a smile on their face after everything that you've been through. So for organ donor cards as well, we want to give out the free text number. So you free text donor to 50050, or you can log into the Irish Kidney Association, which is ika.ie, www.ika.ie. And again, all of us need to remember we can indicate our wishes on the driver's license as well,
exactly,
which is important too.
100%.
Lovely to chat to you.
Yeah, you too.
Safe fantastic. Back to Kilkenny. Mind yourself.
Thanks so much.
Take it easy.
See you later.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That is the wonderful Denise Chyla there. Keep your text coming in to 51551. So festival season, as we know, is well and truly upon us. And while so many of us are keen to get back out and scream and sing and dance, maybe roll around in the muck, unfortunately, we cannot escape the effect that being wasteful at a music festival has on the environment. Joining me now is Megan Best, who is Managing Director with Native Events, a company that aims to look at encouraging sustainability for events and festivals throughout the country. Good afternoon, Megan.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I am flying, not a bother. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Thanks for having me on.
Not at all, not at all. Did you have a nice weekend? Were you festivaling anywhere?
No, I got to take this weekend off.
Okay, good. Well, your company, Native Events, they're running a pilot at this year's Flacheol na hÉireann to show that camping and festivals can be done sustainably. So, first of all, like, tell me where the business idea came from.
Oh, I mean, we have been thinking about this kind of idea and concept for quite some time. I mean, I've been in the festivals and events industry for 12, 13 years now, okay, and have been witnessing what's been going on in that space for quite some time. And I mean, five or six years ago, some pals and I did a big salvaging effort at one of the festival campsites. Mm-hmm. And we gathered together loads of equipment and tents and sleeping bags and all sorts of bits and bobs. And we brought them over to Calais, to the refugee camp that was there. Mm-hmm. And I think that experience kind of triggered something. It was like, there's definitely something going on here, and there's a solution that needs to be thought about and thought in quite an in-depth way and a comprehensive way, so that all of this stuff doesn't get left behind in the field in the first place.
And you
so
see,
it's been
under
development for quite some time, yeah.
Mm. I think when, like, we all go to festivals, you know, you're leaving and you're not even sort of looking behind you. I was at the Guns N' Roses gig in Marley Park and I stayed till the end, which I normally wouldn't do at a festival, to see the full scale of everything. But even the end of the gig, it was just a sea of disposable beer cups, and you couldn't even see the grass for... Now, obviously, it was cleaned and turned over the next day because there was gigs on every night there. But, I mean, that's just one concert. And then when I was thinking about a festival, when you have 10,000 people there, for example, at an Irish festival, do we know what's the actual waste, or, you know, is there figures in terms of what sort of waste is created?
Yeah, there is actually. There's been a lot of work done on this in the UK. They've been doing quite a lot of sector measurements and data analysis on this. Not so much here in this country as of yet, although Native Events is seeking to change that. But there is a carbon calculator that's available for the creative industries in the UK. It's called the Julie's Bicycle Carbon Calculator. And it's been taken up by a lot of the events and festivals and galleries and theatres and so on over there. And what's really nice about it is it's gathered data from all of the sector, essentially. Mm. And what they've been able to do over the last 10, 12 years is really get a good understanding of the impact of all of these creative industries. And what they found was that the average typical music festival creates about 2.4 kilos of waste per person per day. But I mean, in terms of the Irish context, as I say, we've been working in this space for a while. I remember there was a gig in 2018 that we worked with, which was a 10,000, funnily enough, capacity music festival. Mm. And that created 138 tons of waste, two-thirds of which we reckon was probably campsite waste, because it's the hardest to deal with, it's the hardest to segregate.
And when you say campsite waste, Megan, sorry for interrupting you, are you talking cheap tents being left behind, cheap sleeping bags, general rubbish? Like, is that everything? Like, are you talking across the board there?
Yeah, basically, like, if you... And I'm sure your listeners and yourself have probably seen some of the photos in the media following these big festivals and the campsites just littered with all of this kind of camping equipment.
The tents just left standing, like perfectly functioning tents just left there.
That's it, unfortunately, yeah. But there's also everything else. It's food waste, it's clothing, it's cans, it's the camping chairs, some of which are broken. So it's a mishmash of everything, which actually makes it really difficult for organisers to deal with. And again,
so then is the fault not on the people attending the festivals, and not the festival organisers?
I think, and it's a really good question, Catherine, and actually there's a number of different people and a number of different players in this. If you think about a festival, it's kind of like building a city for 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 people over the course of a weekend. Mm. So it's a very temporary space that's being created, used and enjoyed over the course of one weekend, and then all taken back down again. So there's a number of different stakeholders, from the people who own the land, to the people putting on the gig, to all of the site and contractors and crew, the performers, the artists, and the audience themselves. And every single one of those people makes it a set of decisions going into the event. Mm. And all of those decisions are all impacting on each other. And that's what's creating what's happening at the end. Mm. So actually, it takes a number of different intervention points and designing that system towards a number of different intervention points and messaging, communications, organisers, embedding sustainability in what they're doing in order to start to drive and make a bit of change in it.
So tell me about the campsite then this weekend that you're running at Flakiol na Héireann. It's a circular campsite, is that right?
Yeah, so the idea is essentially that we're following the principles of the circular economy, which is to design out waste and pollution in the first place by offering materials that are reused, by offering product as a service, so hiring out a kit that we will install for people. So essentially they can arrive to a campsite that's already set up, saving them on buying loads of things, dragging them into a field, using it for the weekend and potentially leaving it behind.
It's so simple.
Yeah, you would think. And also the idea of just kind of sharing assets and hiring instead of buying all of these kind of one-off pieces. And then you moving towards like reusable serveware, renewable energies, regenerating natural systems and so on.
Okay, and the plan then is to introduce an app in time also?
Yeah, so we're basically, the Revolve campsite, as we're calling it, is in phase one this year. Now, we've been developing it since we took our foray out into the salvaging of the campsite many years ago. So this year we have launched the website. We're working with Flakiol na Héireann, which is an exciting partnership. And that's where people can book and learn about this this initiative, essentially, which is as much about community building as it is about providing a service. Then the next piece is to launch an online shop that goes with it so that people can actually purchase the bits and pieces that they need in advance, again, reducing the transport needs and reducing the waste. And then the final piece will be an app, which will be like a community forum where you can buy tickets, communicate with other festival goers, maybe do car sharing, earn Revolve campsite points and vote on different facilities. The idea essentially is to turn the campsite from a place of just somewhere where you go and you pitch your tent and you have a good time to somewhere that you have a bit of pride of place in and you get to know your neighbours and develop that kind of community.
There's that sense of community. Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like there's great strides being made in the right direction, but a lot of work still needing to be done as well. Megan Best from Native Events, thanks for chatting to me this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You're still sending in your misheard lyrics, which are giving us a giggle in here. Maureen always hears when the song Islands in the Stream comes on. She always hears, Ireland's industry, which I thought was particularly good. Anna, Heaven Knows No Frontiers. Anna always hears, Heaven Knows No Frontiers. Like that one as well. Okay, Anish Toshe and Am the Priv Shkilt and Anukdal is Seamus MacDonagh. Gura Mahogut, Seamus. All right, now it is time for this. Yes, today's quiz, as per. Reeling in the ears, we've gathered up sounds and clips from the years and the decades, including songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And we have two people ready to play for a fantastic prize. What is that prize today? Well, Carton House, which is Ireland's first Fairmont property. It's now a 5-star resort located 25 minutes from Dublin in beautiful County Kildare. 1,100 acres of private parkland, beautiful golf courses, luxury spa, wellness facilities. You can go on a boat trip, you can go fishing, you can eat till the cows come home, as they say. You can have afternoon tea in the Gold Salon, you can go wine tasting at Duke's Restaurant or fine dining in the Morrison Room. So one of our players today will win two nights for two people staying in the Carton House, a Fairmont managed hotel. And if you did not get onto the radio today, you can check out cartonhouse.com because they have lots of summer breaks available there. So what we asked was, today is the 4th of July. It's celebrated as the National Day of Independence in what country? And that is, of course, the United States of America. Breed Gamel and Gary Beatty got it right and they are both on the line. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Well,
are
you? Listen, we're mighty here up in RTE today. Breed, you're player number one. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Killiney in County Dublin, Catherine, but I'm actually a Carla woman.
Oh, Breed is the winner. Breed is the winner.
That's what I was hoping you'd say.
Fix. Yeah.
From Tullow, County Carlow.
So. Ah, fantastic. And how long have you been in? Have you been in Dublin for a while? Or?
Oh, about like 37 or 8 years, Catherine. I know. But I go home every week, honest to God, up and down.
Have you still family down there?
Yeah, I have my mother, Maura Shepherd. And I know my sister was on before and mentioned her name. She was 90 last September. So, Yeah, she's hale and hearty, so we're very lucky.
How
to have
are
her.
You, Maura? Good afternoon. Hope you're well.
Yeah, no, she's great. So I have then two brothers, Jim and John, a sister Rose and a sister Mary. Rose lives in Tullow, Mary lives in Rathbilly, and the two boys live beside Mammy in just outside the town in Tullow.
Lovely, so, lovely part of the world. And then your kids?
My sister in Ennis. I have a story. Oh, God, I forgot.
Don't forget her.
Anne in Ennis would be
don't
murdered.
Don't forget Anne in Ennis.
In Ennis, yeah. She was on to you before last year. So, but yeah, I have Lucy is in New York at the moment on a J1, and Ronan's heading off tomorrow to Thailand for 3 weeks.
Brilliant. So these are the two kids.
The dream.
And what sort of J1? Did she get a good J1 job? Is she being paid?
Yeah.
Has she got one of those cushy numbers, or like me, was she cleaning toilets?
No, she's working on a boat called the Honourable William Wall, and it's right out in the Hudson Bay.
Excuse me.
It's fantastic. I know, it's amazing, actually. And she's working with all her friends as well, which is brilliant. So it's a really good one.
Brilliant.
They're working hard, I'd say, but like enjoying it. Absolutely, 100% enjoying it.
Brilliant.
You know, so
and Ronan then heading off to Thailand for a couple of weeks as well. Brilliant.
Yes, lucky so, him as well.
Who are you going to take to Carton House if you win?
Well, I'll take my husband Chris, who's currently he's working upstairs. He's home, working from home since COVID. So he'll definitely. We were 25 years married this year, so definitely. So all
brilliant,
going well.
Brilliant. Yeah. All right, Breed, stay on the line. Gary Beattie, how are you, sir?
Greetings from Longford. Hello, Catherine.
Greetings from Longford. But you're a tip man in Longford. What happened?
I am indeed. Oh, I met the lovely Martina many, many years ago at Copperface Jack's. And as you said, the rest is history.
Does anyone meet each other in Copperface Jack's anymore?
Not since COVID.
It was a good night. It was worth buying her a drink, Gary.
Oh, well, sometimes I don't know about that. Which is cracking the whip and making me work very hard at home.
Oh, I love it. Well, what are you up to today?
I'm looking after the two boys because Martina's got away. So a big shout out to Jack and Owen. Of course, Jack's birthday is today. He's 15. So
happy birthday, Jack. Brilliant. So Jack and Owen is at home as well.
Yes, indeed. We are cleaning the house just in case Mammy's listening.
Okay. Where's Martina disappeared to? Where's she left you in the lurch?
Oh, she's got off with the friends there, so she is for today, gallivanting.
And does she know you're on the radio? You could say nothing if you win and just skip off to Carton yourself and the two boys. I'm sure they'd have a lovely family room.
I'd say so, yeah. And she'll find out. She's a great, great way of finding things out.
She does. Well, listen, lovely chatting to you today, Gary. Breed and Gary, do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Yeah,
best of luck, Gary. Thank you. Thanks, Emil.
All right, Breed, you are player number one. So we are going to start with you. And the year is 1994. All right. It is a movie clip that we're going to start with first, Breed. How are you with the movies?
Probably not great. Never mind, though.
Are you going to go long or short?
I might go long just to be on the safe side.
Okay, so long is going to bank you 1 point. Short, of course, gets you 2 points, but you're going to play it safe and start, try and get 1 point on the board. So this is your movie question, Breed. It would go on to become one of the most successful animated movies of all time. Can you name this Disney classic released in 1994?
Simba, you have forgotten me.
No.
You have forgotten who you are and so forgotten me.
Is it The Lion King?
Breed, absolutely fantastic. It is The Lion King. Yes, it mopped up at the box office. Do you know how much it earned in 1990? $698.5 million.
Wow, yeah. Holy God.
The highest earning Disney animation in history. It is beloved in our house.
We have the soundtrack here from ages ago as well.
It's just wonderful. Okay, yeah. 1 point on the board for you. Gary, back to you. Movies for you. Are you going to go long or short?
Short.
Okay, try and get 2 points. This, Gary, would go on to become a breakthrough role for comic performer Jim Carrey. But can you name the 1994 comedy where his character tries to solve the case of a missing dolphin?
I'm ready to go in, Coach. Just give me a chance. I know there's a lot riding on it, but it's all psychological.
Can you name the movie, Gary?
Is it Ace Ventura, Pet Detective?
You are correct. Well done, you.
Thank you.
That was great. Yeah. Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. So 2 points on the board for you. Okay, Breed, it's music next. What do you think? Long or short?
I'll go short this time.
Okay. This group had a smash hit with their 1994 single. Can you name the song or the group?
I see your face before me.
I know it.
As I lay on my bed.
Come on, Breed.
Wet. My favourite songs. I love it.
Oh, you love it. What's the lead singer? Morten Harkett.
Marty Pello.
What am I thinking of? Oh, I'm thinking of Aha. Yeah, Marty Pello. Good old Marty Pello. Okay, so two points on the board for you, Breed. Well done.
Brilliant.
Gary, coming back to you. How are you in the music stakes?
Oh, not great.
Okay, well,
it's Christy Moore, I'm laughing.
Okay, well, listen, Breed has 3 points. You've got two. Are you going to go long or short?
We'll go short.
Try and bank 2 points. Okay, this Irish rock group took the world by storm in 1994. But can you name the song or the group?
Is it Cranberry Zombie?
Yes, Gary. Well done, you. Fabulous. Okay, so that's 4 points for you, Breed. Sorry, you are on three. The last and final question, Breed, is the news question. Are you going to go long or short?
I'll go short, Kat.
Okay. So this is for 2 points, Breed, if you can get it right. Dance sensation Riverdance first premiered at the Point Theatre as an interval act for what event?
The Eurovision
Song Contest. Sorry. You didn't even have to hear the clip.
I remember it so well.
Okay, what a night.
Brilliant.
That's it. Well done. That's what we were looking for. The 1994 Riverdance Eurovision. And thanks to Niamh Kavanagh, Ireland enjoyed its second consecutive year hosting the event, with Jerry Ryan and Cynthia Niverku presenting the live event. Okay, so that means, Breed, you finish on 5 points. Gary, you are on 4. So are you going to go long or short? Long will get you a tiebreaker. Short will get you the win.
We'll go short.
Okay. It's all in this question, Gary. This is your news question for 2 points. Eventually being knocked out by the Netherlands, the Republic of Ireland had some success in what 1994 sports tournament?
It's definitely the pinnacle of my career. To lead the team out in at the Giant Stadium, especially against Italy in that first game, was...
It was the World Cup in 1994 in America.
Woohoo! Well done, you, Gary. Fantastic. 6 points, which means you are our winner today, lads. That was close.
Well done.
Hard luck, Breed.
No, thank you anyhow. Well done.
Well done, Breed.
Thanks for the
chat. We're going to send you out 2 Ray Darcy Show mugs, and we'll get them out to you. And enjoy the afternoon. Gary, are you chuffed?
I'm delighted. we're dancing around the kitchen.
Well, I've just got a text here saying, "Hi, Catherine. I hear you have my brother-in-law on after the news for the quiz. Say hi to him from all the Casey's listening in the car in Lanzarote."
Hi, Brian, Adele and family.
Fantastic. Well, listen, enjoy it. Carton House is wonderful. You're going to have such a fabulous day. And you have to say now, are you going to take herself?
Oh, God, of course.
All right.
You can tell my sister-in-law she's babysitting.
There you go. Exactly. Love it. Listen, have a great afternoon, Gary. Mind the boys.
Take it easy.
Bye.
The
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope, our consumer champion, is winging his way into the studio for Price Watch, so stay tuned for him. But now let's get a little bit of Paloma Faith. That is Paloma Faith there, stone cold sober. All right, it is time for Price Watch with our consumer champion, Conor Pope. And you can email the problems you need Conor to solve to pricewatch@rte.ie. How are you, sir?
I'm great.
Good. You had a nice weekend?
I was working for a bit of it, but I had a nice Sunday.
Good. You got to put the feet up for a little bit.
No. I was cleaning my house.
Okay.
We were all cleaning my house.
A bit like our quizzer there, who was hot walloping all weekend.
Although it's funny, I heard the Cranberries. Do you know, the first journalism I ever got paid for was a review of the first Cranberry single.
Wow.
And I'd love to tell you now, I sensed their potential at the time.
You didn't?
Oh, no, it was a very meh review. It wasn't terrible, it wasn't great, but it was just like, and then within about 6 months, they were one of the biggest bands in the world. And it was the first paid journalism I did.
She's such a distinctive voice when you hear her, doesn't it? Like, it's amazing.
But there was a band around at the time called The Sundays. I don't know if you remember The Sundays. They were like a really serious English indie band.
Okay.
And the Cranberries sounded a little bit like The Sundays. But then within about 3 weeks, people were like, The Sundays? Who are they?
Because everything was
about the Cranberries.
Yeah. So. Oh, I just loved her. We got to work with her on The Voice.
Oh, yeah.
That year that she did. And she was hilarious as well. She was so funny.
I've never heard anyone say a bad word about her.
She was so pleasant and looked after, like, didn't care about the the bigger picture, the, the jigs and the reels, just focused on the kids that were on stage, you know. It's amazing. Okay, you have a timely question that came in today about cancelled flights that goes like this. I was due to fly home to London on Sunday, but my Aer Lingus flight was cancelled. I was told it would be 48 hours before I could get a flight, but I couldn't find out what my rights were. Do they have to look after me while I'm stuck here? And am I entitled to compensation?
Well, the short answer to the first part of the question is yes. And then the second part of the question, the answer to the second part is it depends, which isn't perhaps the most helpful answer in the world. But there are really clearly laid out rules and regulations in place for when flights get cancelled. Because the reality is flights are going to get cancelled. It could be an ash cloud, it could be snow, it could be a strike, or it could be a COVID outbreak. And when a flight is cancelled, you have certain rights. Now, in times past, if you arrived up at an airport and the flight was cancelled, they'd say, oh, but we're putting you up in X hotel or Y hotel, and here's a meal voucher, and you'd be looked after in that sense. But that doesn't happen anymore, or at least it very rarely happens. Maybe if you're flying long haul, you might get that kind of treatment. But your rights haven't changed. And under a regulation, an EU regulation called 261, an airline has a responsibility to you until it can get you to your destination. Now, depending on the type of traveller you are, that responsibility might change. So, like, if you live within 5 miles of Dublin Airport, you know, they're not going to be obliged to put you in a hotel until they can get you home until they can get you to your destination. But let's say if you do live in London, like this particular person does, they have a right to you. Now, the difficulty is, and we've seen this not just with Aer Lingus, but with airlines all over the world, trying to make contact with somebody who can tell you your rights and give you what you need in real time is almost impossible. So in a situation like this, what a person they have a right to accommodation until the airline can get you home. They have a right to refreshments and reasonable expenses. Now, the word reasonable is a bit loose. Like, yes. What does that mean? Like, can you have 15 pints in the pub? Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Given that you can't get access to the airline in real time when you're in the airport and your flight has been cancelled, what people are best advised to do is you book into a hotel if you can get one. And it doesn't matter if the hotel costs 300 euros or 150 euros, because we all know the story about the hotel prices in Dublin at the moment, and they're going through the roof. You book your 2 nights accommodation in the hotel, you cover your meals, you cover your expenses, that could be a taxi to and from the airport or whatever it might be. You keep all your receipts, and then you have to reply retrospectively to the airline. And in this instance, it's Aer Lingus. But it could be any airline that operates out of Dublin Airport. And in that instance, that you are entitled to a full reimbursement of your legitimate, reasonable expenses until they can get you home. Now, the only there's two different exceptions. One is if you say, oh, listen, I'm going to get a refund. I'm going to get a refund and book a flight with another airline. Once you get the refund, that's it. Their responsibility to you ends. Their responsibility to you is only in place as long as you have a booking with them, and they're obliged to get you home. So within the 48-hour window, this person would have been entitled to 2 nights in a hotel, plus breakfast, lunch and dinner, plus taxi to and from the airport, plus any kind of other reasonable expenses that they might have incurred that they could. But the difficulty is you have to submit all the expenses to the airline after the fact.
Okay.
Now, that's,
if you wanted to go refund, is it very easy to do it online within that
absolutely
time.
If you get the refund, it's very straightforward. But the difficulty is you could get the refund and then you say, okay, well, I'll book a flight with Ryanair, for instance, because Ryanair weren't affected to the same degree, but then you might struggle to get your flight with Ryanair. Now, interestingly, an airline would also be obliged to cover the cost of your flight with an alternate airline. Now, this wasn't really clear until quite recently, but then it became clear that if an airline can't get you home on a timely basis and you can get home on another airline faster, well, then book with the other airline and your airline A has to cover that cost. But it's very important you get that confirmed with the first airline in the first instance. And then in terms of the compensation, it depends, because under the EU 261 regulations, if the cancellation is outside of the control of the airline, well, then you're not entitled to compensation. So if there was a volcano, or if there was weather, or if indeed there was an industrial dispute that grounded all the airlines, you're not entitled to compensation. This is a slightly more tricky one, because at this stage it's unclear as to what is behind the cancellations.
The cancellation.
Because it could be, in the instance of Aer Lingus, had to cancel flights to Lyon and to Bordeaux because there was industrial disputes on the ground in those
in
two
France,
airports. It could be that COVID-19 had so disrupted their scheduling that there was absolutely no way they could accommodate all the requirements for flying, and in which case they had no choice. But the old phrase used to be an act of God, but of course nobody uses that phrase anymore. But if it is in circumstances beyond their control, you're not entitled to compensation. So when a person is contacting an airline in circumstances like this, you don't say, I demand compensation. What you're demanding is reimbursement for all the reasonable expenses that you incur while you're travelling.
What about travel insurance?
Travel insurance, might cover it. Mm. But like, for instance, not often will a travel insurance policy cover something like this.
They'll revert you back to the airline.
Exactly. Now, what it might cover is, for instance, let's say if you had a holiday lost as a result of this. Well, you might be able to claim back the portion of your spending that covered. So let's say if you had a room in a hotel booked for 3 days and your flight was cancelled and you couldn't cover the cost, you couldn't get there. Well, then you should really be able to claim that onto your travel insurance. But it does, of course, depend on the type of policy you have, because the travel insurance documents can be hideously complicated, and they can vary wildly between the so-called bronze level package to the gold level package. So it really does depend on what individual travel insurance policy somebody has.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading a story over the weekend in the papers of a honeymoon couple, and they'd booked, and it was the first 3 nights, and they'd gone all out. It was the fancy hotel, it was the 5-star, and it was the first 3 nights of their honeymoon, which of course they were stuck, they couldn't get out.
Yeah.
And they'd gone sort of cheap and cheerful after
and
that.
See, the terrible thing about that is that, like, even if you get the money back, you're not getting the experience.
No.
And the experience is being denied to you. And we talked about it on the show a couple of weeks back, when people, like more than 1,400 people, had their flights cancelled as a result of delays at Dublin Airport and security queues. And like, there was people who missed out on experiences. Like a family was travelling to see Harry Styles play in Manchester. Flight was cancelled. You know, so they might be, you know, they might get out on the next flight, or they might get out 2 days later. But Harry Styles isn't hanging around waiting for them to get there. So that's an experience missed. And I think that's the real tragedy for a lot of these things.
OK, text coming in here. Is there a time limit by which you must apply for a refund?
I would apply quickly. Mm-hmm. You have to apply within a reasonable time frame. So it could be 30 days after all the expenses were incurred, or after you get home.
OK. Connor would love to know, what is the story where an airline is not responsive within a reasonable time frame? 2.5 hours holding on the phone and no reasonable responses online. If we can't get confirmation as to alternatives, what are the options?
This is really, really frustrating. And it's a story that I've heard
an awful lot
in recent times. An awful lot of airlines, not just Aer Lingus, make it incredibly difficult for people to actually contact them. And if you can't contact an airline to establish your rights, well, then what are you going to do? Now, the airlines will point to links that they have, or pages on their websites that will explain all of these things. But I think there's a real deficit in communications between the passengers and the airlines. Because, as I say, in times past, there would have been staff on site at check-in desks or on the ground explaining to people what needs to be done. Here's your vouchers, here's where you need to stay. Yeah. But all of that stuff has gone. And it has gone because all airlines in Europe, not so much with low cost, but all airlines across Europe are pursuing the low cost model that Ryanair has, to its credit, shown to be immensely profitable. Mm-hmm. That has driven down fares across the world. And of course, ultimately, you pay for that when things go wrong. Because it's all fine and dandy when you get your 12 euro flight or 10 euro flight to London. But if something goes wrong, and you can't get redress in the short term, that's because the flight only costs 10 euros or 12 euros or whatever it might be.
Okay, and lots of texts then coming in about not being able to get a hotel when you're stuck.
That's another story.
In the paper, in the Irish Times, you've been looking at a report that shows how we as people and also as consumers have changed our behaviour after COVID. But I suppose now that we're in what you've termed an age of hyper uncertainty, we've got the war in Ukraine along with inflation building as well.
It's really grim.
It's a different world, and it's rather bleak.
It is, and it's not going to get any less bleak in the days and weeks ahead. And it was actually the behaviour and attitudes people who dubbed it the age of hyper uncertainty. I'd actually call it an age of hyper anxiety, because people are just completely frazzled, because literally as soon as we thought that COVID was lifting, although we now know that it wasn't lifting, it was just going away for a little while. As soon as that happened, the war in Ukraine happened. And then, of course, the inflation that we were told would be all over by June just got worse and worse and worse. And now we're heading into double-digit inflation. And the terrible thing is, there's an emotional element to this as well, because people just don't know where it's going to end. And that's kind of scary for people, because an awful lot of us, I have never experienced this level of inflation. And the last time there was this level of inflation in Ireland, I was in short pants and I didn't give a rashers, because I was like, but my parents had to deal with that kind of stuff. It's never had an impact on my life, but it is going to have it in the next few months.
It's rather sobering reading. Is there any glimmer of light in the report at all?
No.
It being 29 minutes past four.
Do you know what? The one hope that people have is that there are still savings out there for people who haven't swapped or switched, and I'm talking about switching your energy, switching your mortgage, switching your groceries, switching your health insurance. There's a lot of people out there, and I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of people who could make savings by being a little bit proactive in the switching market, but that's not going to help anybody who's already done that and has already put to the pin of their collar.
Okay, Conor Pope, as always, thanks a million for coming in this afternoon. That is all we've got time for. And just to say again, if you do want to email any problems into Conor, it is pricewatch@rte.ie. All right, I will be back tomorrow. Next up is Sarah and Cormac on Drive Time. Have a lovely afternoon.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.